Hey, talking about local news in Minnesota, the big thing is that the legislature is done, at least for now, as the session did wrap up today. So to help us try to gather up what happened in the state legislature, and maybe more importantly, what wasn't passed during the last legislative session, is Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. She is with the DFL and represents District 53, which includes portions of the Southeast Metro, including Woodbury and surrounding communities. Hey, Senator Susan Kent, how are you doing today?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. So, certainly when we had the COVID-19 pandemic really take hold in Minnesota, it certainly changed things in the state legislature since we had the DFL caucus and the Republican caucus having their own priorities on what they would like to see passed. And then all of a sudden, here comes COVID-19, and that really changed, I'm sure, a lot of the thought process in the legislature in terms of what's going to get passed, what takes precedent, and so on and so on. So talked about that process, about how things changed when COVID-19 really took hold in Minnesota.
Well, it really has been. I think all of us feel like time has been so distorted over the past couple of months. And when I think back on the session started on February 11th, and I think it was February 24th or 25th that we got the budget forecast, which would dictate what we would do with the rest of the session. And, you know, at that point, we still had a $1.5 billion surplus, and it was a week later that we started getting the warnings about economic decline as a result of COVID, both globally and then coming into the United States and Minnesota. And then everything changed. March 16th was sort of our last day to sort of be in the legislature in person. And since then, we've been working in a very different way. And as you said, it really changed, obviously, the economic side of this, but also the need to really address the health needs, the safety needs, the healthcare infrastructure needs to deal with COVID, to support our businesses and our workers and our families through this. It has just turned everything sideways. But our priorities and values are still the same, and that is taking care of Minnesotans.
So let's start talking about what happened in the legislature, especially since COVID-19 took hold. Now, a lot of attention was paid to what wasn't passed. But before we get to that, let's talk about some of the accomplishments that we were able to pass here in Minnesota with the House, the Senate, and, of course, Governor Walz agreeing on a number of issues. We had, of course, the emergency insulin bill that got passed. We also at least saw some reform with elections in terms of how those will be taking place this fall. Can you talk about at least some of the accomplishments we had during this session?
Yeah, those are a couple of the big ones. Obviously, the Outset Insulin Act was a big deal to get that done after over a year's worth of delay. We needed to do that. We were excited to pass the Tobacco 21 Act this past week, I think it was, which includes a lot of vaping protections for kids, which we know is so important. And then we did a whole bunch of things that were COVID related, you know, both in terms of the public health standpoint, making sure that our healthcare providers have what they need to treat patients and be prepared in terms of supplies, you know, so much talk about PPE, and testing and all of that. And then the things we did to support our childcare providers and to support distance learning and to make sure that our state could move forward and support Minnesotans as we are addressing with the health and the economic impacts of this disease. So we did. We were, you know, on a bipartisan basis, we were able to get a number of good things done.
So looking at this elections bill that was passed, it at least does appropriate federal funds and help prepare the state for COVID-19 impacted elections. But unfortunately, there was really nothing in there in terms of trying to get the state to an all vote by mail system by this fall. And of course, Republicans also didn't get what they wanted either, which was a voter ID bill. So there certainly were some compromises made on this bill. Is there still any hope for movement, maybe in a special session, for trying to get a vote by mail system put in place, being what we saw in Wisconsin and other states having some problems of trying to institute this system on short notice? Can you talk about that?
I wish we could. I think, you know, we would love to be able to really expand vote by mail. People talk about, you know, we have the no excuses absentee balloting, which can be done by mail, and we have communities throughout Minnesota that already have vote by mail. And so, you know, a lot of people think, well, we just can use the system we already have. But the way that's administered through counties and some of the details of that make it more cumbersome. And so we can probably expand it, but I believe it would have been better if we could have done true vote by mail. Mm-hmm. But that would be difficult to get ramped up on such a short timeline. And, you know, the reality is, you know, in the Senate, Republicans, as you remember, we've had this conversation on your station many times, you know, the Senate elections chair, Mary Kiffmeyer, wouldn't even let the approval of the HAVA money, the voting money from the feds, be authorized. It didn't cost us a penny to authorize that federal money to protect our elections. It took a year to make that happen. And so if we can't even get her to do that, you know, it just wasn't going to happen that in a divided legislature we were going to be able to get vote by mail passed.
Yeah, and as you brought up, certainly is a key point that trying to do that now on very short notice would be very tough to ramp up. So maybe get that in a future election cycle, but probably won't be happening here, at least for the 2020 elections. We're speaking.
Right. And just make sure that, you know, the Secretary of State, Steve Simon, and his office and our counties have what they need to be able to really effectively do our existing absentee ballot system, early voting system.
We're speaking with Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. She is with the DFL, represents District 53, which includes Woodbury and some of the surrounding communities. So one of the major disappointments out of this legislative session was the lack of a bonding bill, because I imagine here, Senator Kent, there's a lot of projects that are going to end up being missed. Now, of course, we mostly heard from the Republican side, at least in the House, that Kurt Dowd and other members of the GOP were very steadfast on passing any bonding bill until they were able to curb some of Governor Tim Walz's emergency orders. But what was the feeling kind of on the Senate side? Was there an appetite for trying to get something done on the bonding bill?
I would say yes, and in conversations with Senator Gazelka, there were very positive conversations. He indicated a real support for a more robust bonding bill, which was very, very encouraging. But the problem was, I mean, you can talk about a number, right? But then you actually have to deliver it. And a bonding bill isn't just a number. A bonding bill is a complex collection of projects, and each of those has details and specifics that have to be worked out. And you want to build a good bonding bill, you want to balance it between the types of projects they are, whether it's water and wastewater or roads and bridges or transit or different types of community projects, and trails and parks and et cetera, but also around the state and all of that. So we were asking publicly and privately for them to engage with us, Senate Republicans to engage with DSL Capital Investment Committee members for weeks, months, to bring a bill forward. Let's talk about it. Let's evaluate it. Let's take it through a committee process. Let's have it be a transparent thing. We released our version of a bill, which is, you know, we're in the minority, so we knew it wasn't going to go anywhere, but it was at least hoping to start the discussion. We released that a couple of weeks ago. They didn't release their bill, their list, until the day before we adjourned, Saturday afternoon. And it was too small. It was nowhere near the number that Senator Gazelka had been talking about. And it didn't leave us any time to effectively build that in a healthy way, other than just slapping things together. And that's not what you do with more than $1 billion worth of investment projects. And finally, this is about jobs. And, you know, we wanted a big, robust bonding bill at the beginning of session, long before we thought of the impact that COVID-19 was going to have on our communities. And as the session went on and we began to see this impact, we realized bonding is really one of the only economic stimulus tools that we have at the state level. We can't do it the way the feds can. And so it became more imperative that we have a good bonding bill. And, you know, what the Republicans slapped together at the last minute and threw in on Saturday afternoon before we adjourned on Sunday evening just didn't do it. And so our caucus stood together and said, no, we need to do better for Minnesota. And you know, we'll be coming back in a special session, and we want to come back and do this right and hopefully have the time to have these conversations.
Well, that just sounds like deja vu from what we've had happen so often, especially on the House side, where we get these bills that are put together at the very last second, and it's thousands of pages of bills, and you have just a few hours to end up reading what's in these exact things. And it sounds like yet again, this happened on the Senate side, yeah, with this bonding bill being proposed just one day before the Senate was going to adjourn. It's got to be very frustrating, I'm imagining.
It is. It absolutely is. And it's not doing right by the people of Minnesota. If anybody in our families or our businesses wants to make a major investment, you put time and thought and research into it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to work it out with somebody else, you invest the time to make sure that you do. And everybody knows. I mean, passing a bonding bill requires a supermajority. And so, you know, this absolutely should be a truly bipartisan project, and not just in the big picture number, actually diving in and putting it together.
Yeah, just tough since we've been seeing this so often happen in the past, especially on that House side where we saw omnibus bills being passed at the very last second. I want to talk about another aspect of that was brought up during the legislature here, Senator Susan Kent, and this is something that I know House Republicans were very unhappy about, and that is that Governor Walz, of course, had that emergency authority to enact, well, emergency powers, which are now going to be extended into June. I know on the Senate side some Republicans were eager to put some authority or at least get some input on these emergency orders. Can you share your thoughts on what was happening in terms of trying to curb maybe Governor Walz's orders and what your thoughts are?
Well, it's worth pointing out that in 50 states, the governors have emergency powers right now because of this pandemic, because it requires them to be able to marshal the work of the agencies and coordinate those efforts. Governor Walz and his team have done here in Minnesota so effectively. And if you look at other states, you can tell it hasn't been done and coordinated nearly as well as we have. And if you look at the federal government, obviously you can see what a lack of coordination looks like. And the reality is the legislature has 201 people simply cannot act as efficiently as a governor can. That's why these emergency powers exist in statute and why they've been enacted. There is a question over time as this emergency goes on, and it will eventually come to an end, its natural end, because of how the disease progresses and how our communities are doing. So there are things that we've done through executive order that the legislature probably needs to ramp up in statute to meet. So there is a honest conversation to have about how this will all play out over time. It is not wise, by anybody's definition, to flip a switch and just end it, because that would leave Minnesota in a lurch, unprepared to deal with what is still a growing concern. I was just looking at how every day I check the Department of Health situation update, and, you know, we are still on a growth curve. We have more people in ICU today than we have had at any point during this. This entire public health emergency. And so, let's have that conversation, but it needs to be held thoughtfully and in a way that makes sure that we protect the well-being of Minnesotans.
Now, one of the concerns Republicans also had, and I wasn't aware of this, is that under state law, the governor can spend any unexpected federal money the state receives after a state budget is approved. And, of course, the governor now technically has access to the state's $2 billion worth of their share from CARES money that, of course, was passed on the congressional level. So I can kind of get where Republicans are coming from on this, being a little bit concerned that Governor Walz largely can spend that $2 billion that Minnesota is going to be receiving from the CARES Act. Can you talk about that, your thoughts on this idea that Walz could possibly be able to spend this money we're getting from the federal government?
Well, you know, this is another one where I think if we had worked together better on this, we could have gotten someplace. I think Governor Walz has been he's a former legislator, right? So, I mean, he has a real respect for the role of the legislature in governing. And, for example, on the issue of the emergency powers, it's a vague statute about how that is written and how that continues and et cetera. It's, they took the most legislature-friendly conservative interpretation of that statute on purpose. And they have been very open about trying to work with the legislature to define how we could work together to leave flexibility, as we described, and because of the emergency nature of this, to do some quick actions when needed, but also to have the legislature informing the bigger picture process. There's a significant part of those almost $2 billion that you were talking about that are dedicated to be distributed among our local communities. Well, that's the puzzle, right? How do you take that amount of money and allocate those among our counties and cities, et cetera? So they want legislative input, but again, this is why it's hard to turn the keys over to the legislature, because we sometimes have a hard time reaching a good conclusion.
Yeah, especially when you have over 200 members and then you add the governor in there. Yeah, it can be hard to certainly get things passed in a very timely fashion when you have all those voices certainly giving input. A couple more questions for you here, Senator Susan Kent, and this is something that I also found very disappointing, especially with the narrative on this, and that's the fact that state employees were not able to get ratification on their new collective bargaining agreements, which for the most part would give the state's 47,000 state workers about a 2.5 percentage point raise. Now, Republicans are arguing, saying, well, this is tone deaf to do when we're facing an economic recession. But I always bring up when you talk about this, this is still money that you're giving to state employees with these raises that they're going to go and reinvest back into their own community. So at least from my perspective, I'm disappointed that these raises aren't going to be given to our state employees, because this is money they're largely going to be able to put back into our local communities.
This is disappointing on a number of levels, and you just made a very excellent case. And it's worth pointing out too. I mean, these are the frontline workers, right? These are Department of Corrections. These are public health workers, nurses, educators. These are not, the high level management people within state government. These are the people who are doing the work. This is Minute, who managed to stand up the entire state government and transfer it to work from home and distance learning. I mean, they have moved mountains over the past few weeks. And it is a real slap in the face that because the timing of this ratification, and it just because it has to be done by the end of session, put them in the microscope, in the spotlight, to have their negotiated, pre-negotiated, already paid for cost of living increases up for debate, which it shouldn't be, because in law, these are agreements, contracts that are negotiated in good faith between the employer, and that's the administrative branch, and the employees, and they're represented by their bargaining units. And then it is our job to just ratify them or not. There's no middle ground. And, what the Republicans in the Senate said was, okay, we'll ratify them, except for this other part. And, there's a very serious legal question whether that's legitimate. And it also, if this is an acceptable way to do it, it completely undermines the ability to negotiate in good faith in the first place. So, the money that would be saved here is relatively minimal. I think if we were to just say, okay, we need to go save, however much money we're talking about here, this would not be the first place we'd start to try to save that money. There are other ways we can try to save funds, and those are conversations we do need to have, but not like this.
And just to understand this one more time, these are agreements that were already, well, agreed to by both the employers. That would be, of course, the state government level and the different agencies that employ these different workers, and the employees who already reached this agreement just at the state legislature. You were just ratifying these agreements. That's how the process works, correct?
That's exactly right. And they were in the budget that we passed last year.
Mm-hmm. So this already, the budget already was passed. All
right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. So as we head to a possible special session coming up here in June, Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent, are there any other things we could possibly see get through the state legislature in terms of emergency actions, maybe on either rent or mortgage assistance, or even increasing the pay of our home care workers? Or is it largely set for the rest of the year, and we're just going to be having special sessions just to continue the emergency powers of walls?
I think that we definitely still have the opportunity, and I'm still really committed, and certainly the Senate GFL caucus is committed, and I heard the speaker say it this morning with the governor, that we can come back to where, we just kind of didn't get it done. Some of that may have been related to political posturing by some. It could have been related to the effect of COVID on the session overall. It also can be related to the fact that we know we're very likely to be coming back into special session, and that takes away a lot of the power of sine die, the end of the regular session. It no longer is as hard a deadline as it normally is. And so, you know, I'm still hopeful that we'll be able to come back together and work on the big package, which would be a really great bonding bill, certainly much better than the Senate Republicans put up yesterday. They have some proposals for relatively tax neutral relief for businesses. A lot of that sort of just delaying some of the payments and some federal conformity, which gets in the weeds, but helps farmers and small businesses. And, you know, that's a place I think where we could find agreement. And then some of the things you talked about, like the child care assistance program, the Minnesota Family Investment Program. There are some issues like direct care and treatment and taking care of veterans. There's even something that's, and it's not a huge price tag, but, you know, we should make sure we're continuing to deal with the backlog of the rape kits that haven't been tested. I mean, so there are a couple things like that that, you know, we can do and make some progress on. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to get there.
Well, we'll have to check in when the special session does convene, likely sometime in June. That is Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. She represents District 53, which includes Woodbury and some of the surrounding communities in the Southeast Metro. Senator Kent, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett.